You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And this is the Columbia Calling podcast, episode 322. We've had a really hot run of late with podcasts. People have been tuning in more frequently than ever. Perhaps that's due to quarantines and being stuck at home. Of course, here in Colombia, sort of intelligent isolation has come into play a little bit, and construction workers and essential workers are now being allowed out a little more. But of course, heed the warnings and be careful. On this episode of the Columbia Calling podcast, we're going to be talking to Sean Cloese from San Hill. He's Australian, and he's one of the original hostel owners in Colombia. So he was here when Colombia was still bleeding for tourism, and he opened up, really, San Hill as the adventure sports capital of Colombia to the international market. And we'll be talking to him about how his business has been affected by the coronavirus and what he's doing to try and survive. So a very interesting story here, a very interesting tale about someone, you know, who really, really needs it to come together. Of course, we're in very similar boats, he and I. And so we'll see, you know, we'll talk about what the government's up to, what we hope for the rest of the year, and perhaps a little bit more. So anyway, thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. Stay on the line. We'll go over to Adrian Alsimer of Columbia Reports for the news, and then we'll be back with Sean Cloese and, of course, how you might be able to help him. Thank you. Bye-bye.
My name is Adrian Alsimer, and this is the news for Columbia Calling for April 28, 2020. Both national and international organizations project Colombia could be in for its biggest economic crash in history as a consequence of the coronavirus pandemic. According to economic think tank FEDESarrollo, the economy could contract as much as 7.9% in the worst-case scenario. In the best-case scenario, 1.4 million Colombians will lose their job this year. The World Food Programme warned for an imminent famine in the country, namely among 900,000 Venezuelan migrants. Colombia's government allowed the reactivation of the construction sector and part of the manufacturing sector as it is trying to restart the economy. After fierce protests from Bogota Mayor Claudia Lopez, President Ivan Duque allowed mayors and governors to decide which businesses to open and which not. How long these economic sectors will remain open is uncertain, as the Colombian Medical Federation warned that even a minor surge in the coronavirus could collapse the country's healthcare system. Duque said he would reverse the experiment if this happens. Manufacturing and construction in Bogota did not restart immediately. Instead, city authorities began a process that allows firms to register. Once city authorities have verified the companies comply with strict health protocols, they will be authorized to resume activity. Medellin began a similar process last week but ran into technical issues. Colombia's agriculture minister and seven governors are facing criminal investigations over alleged corruption in emergency programs to counter the effects of the pandemic. The top executives are among dozens who allegedly tried to embezzle or misappropriate emergency aid funds, according to Chief Prosecutor Francisco Barbosa. The prosecution teamed up with the Inspector General's Office and the Comptroller General's Office to optimize coordination in preventing the mass embezzlement of emergency funds. President Ivan Duque has extended the program that promises emergency stipends to the country's poor during an extended quarantine. The president made the announcement on Saturday, a day after the prosecution said it would investigate alleged embezzlement of these funds. To survive the quarantine until May 11, Duque vowed an extra payment of $20 on top of the $40 promised ahead of the lockdown that began on March 25. That's the end of this week's News Bulletin. Now back to Colombia Calling with Richard McCall.
And we're back. This is the final segment of the Colombia Calling podcast this week, episode 322. As I said previously, our very special guest is Sean Closey, who's from Australia, but he's a long-term resident here in Colombia. And in fact, the owner of the Macondo Hostel in San Hill. He's responsible for opening San Hill as the adventure capital of Colombia and one of the original hostels in this country. So, you know, we should obviously lift our hats in admiration that he was here and starting a business, a small business in this country when Colombia was crying out for tourism and bleeding still. And of course, the growth was exponential. But we're going to talk about the reality right now as a small business owner, father, of course, there in San Hill, you know, in the situation with coronavirus, COVID-19, what is going on and how he plans or hopes to survive this difficult and challenging period. So welcome on Colombia Calling, Sean.
How are you doing, Richard?
Thank you. Thank you, Sean. No, it's a real pleasure. It's been a while since we spoke. It's been years. You've got a almost 3-year-old daughter. You're married to May Lynn. Congratulations on these successes.
Thank you very much.
You're most welcome. So tell us a little bit. I mean, how did you end up in, how did you decide on San Gil, Santander, that this was where you were going to make a life?
I was never I traveled a lot before I got to Colombia. I was probably on the move since 99, with traveling through Southeast Asia, Europe, and work visas in different countries. And I traveled through South America, starting from the south, not looking for anywhere to live at all. But I got a tropical disease when I was in the Amazon, a disease called Leishmaniasis, and that changed my life. So I was going to be in Colombia for a month. Probably about 10, 15 days in the country, I got diagnosed with Leishmaniasis, and then the treatment for that lasted about 3 months. And I didn't have many options to go home or anything because there is no Leishmaniasis in Australia. All the doctors there told me to get treated in Colombia. So while I was getting treated here, I met all these amazing people and fell in love with the country. Back then, we were very much told to avoid towns, stick to the major cities, you know, don't travel by bus at night time and things like that. So this was back in 2003. And I was 2003 traveling. And then, yeah, I met all these people all my nurses and people I met were from towns like San Hill and places in Boyacá. So when I got better, I had a whole new map of places I wanted to visit. And so I started traveling through these kind of places and came to San Hill for the first time, made some really good friends, and that's why I decided on him.
And back then you were a dreadlock traveler, and now you're a respectable family man and member of the community.
A bit of a hippie, but, you know.
Well, I know that now that you've had leishmaniasis, and I know that you were the one case of swine flu in San Hill. So I think you beat me in terms of tropical diseases. I've only had malaria, dengue, hemorrhagic dengue, and malaria again. Oh, and typhoid. Not typhoid, sorry.
It's not a competition.
It is always a competition. This is what travelers talk about in hostels. So, but anyway, I mean, you've had the Macondo Hostel there. You were the first to open up in San Hill. I imagine now there's dozens of hostels there in San Hill because of the appeal to the backpacker and traveler and you know, sort of professional travelers who are professionals from other countries who want to come out and do some rafting and things like that. I mean, the growth was incredible.
Yeah, there's probably 20-odd hostels now in Sand Hill. Really good variety of hostels, from ones outside of town like Campestre Farm hostels to some fancier places in town. So there is quite a few options. The hostel's not just busy with the foreigners now. We get a lot of Colombian tourists, and that has been a big change, especially in the last few years, how popular hostels are with Colombians. It's been good.
Uh-huh. That's interesting. I hadn't thought about that at all, that the changing market. And, of course, I think this is something that we're going to have to focus on quite considerably now, in this period, COVID, people not wanting to do long-haul travel, be too far away from home in terms of, pandemics or medical issues. Then you stand in good stead. It's positive for you once these restrictions perhaps of travel around the country are lifted. You're still going to do well if you're appealing to the Colombian market.
Yeah, I mean that's our plan now for the rest of the year, is to really go up and look for the Colombian customers and contact our older customers who've been here before, and hopefully get them to return. But also foreigners living in Colombia has always been a really strong market for us as well. A lot of hostels over the years haven't been that accepting, I've found, of Colombians as guests. I love having Colombians as guests in the hostel, because I find that my guests, the foreign backpacker guests, love having Colombians in the hostel as well. Mm-hmm. So it's usually a great interaction between the two groups. Having local people stay at the hostel as well, they make good friends. They end up hooking up in their cities and meeting up when people go back to Bogota or Medellin and stuff like that. So hopefully we can continue on with our national tourism over the next few months. But Sand Hill's always been a very popular destination for Colombian tourists.
Mm. Is it true that the Sahileños are the most envious people in Santander?
No, I don't know about that.
I've only heard it from other Santanderians. So tell me a little bit. I mean, obviously the coronavirus, let's say, I don't want to say struck, it arrived, and then I guess just cancellations, because that's what we had in Mompos, and returning the money and the for prepaid reservations for Semana Santa was, well, I mean, frankly, catastrophic. How have you been affected? I mean, it's been just as bad, I imagine.
Yeah, I think we closed our doors on the 17th of March. Probably saw it coming a little bit before that and stopped taking reservations. We had the guests in our hostel that, before the virus started, Sandy Hill had a huge problem with the collapse of one of the bridges leading to town. So we actually were having a terrible March to begin with, and it was already affecting tourism. The numbers were low. So when the coronavirus came, we did have about 12, 14 people in the hostel, where other destinations I saw a lot on Facebook, come stay with us for the quarantine. It will only be 15 days. Let's make this fun, kind of selling quarantine packages. We were very different to that in regards to telling our guests, go home, get to Bogota, get a plane. We can't guarantee you anything. There is a good chance this will last for months and you won't be able to get back to your countries. Sand Hill, our hospital was demolished a year ago to build a new hospital, so we are without we have very few hospital beds. We don't have the very few towns do have, are prepared to look after their own people, let alone groups of foreign tourists and stuff like that. So straight away we sent our guests away, we closed down, and obviously the realization that, to begin with, thinking, in 3 months we'll be able to pick up and stuff, but now knowing that probably very little chance of the business making any profit until next year, this is a long-term effect, even though saying we do get a lot of local tourists and stuff, there'll be a lot more competition for the local tourists. Whether or not there's more or less local tourists, that will be hard to say, but, you know, still 80% of our tourists are foreigners, and if there's no flights in the country, we won't be making any money. But yes, just the amount of, I don't think I realised how much money I spend keeping the business running before. My wife's the accountant. My wife does all the books. She's in charge of that thing. And after about a week of being closed, she sat me down and actually explained how expensive it's going to be to stay closed and keep the business. That was a bit of a shock.
Wow. And you don't own the building, so you're paying rent. Has the landlord reduced the rent for you?
We're talking to them, but so far no, there hasn't been any drop in the rent at all. It's funny because I'm talking to lots of hostel owners. I'm a member of a lot of different associations. Mainly the Sand Hill Hotel Association and the Colombian Hostels Association. And a lot of talking to people to begin with individually, like the really small hostels, they were like, oh, it's terrible for us because we don't make that much profit and we have to pay rent and it's going to be really expensive to live. And then talking to the big hostels who, even if they own their buildings or some of them are paying a ridiculous amount of rent, but they have 15, 20 staff members and the amount of cost. So it's not a thing where the really small hostels are going to be affected or the really big ones. Everyone is in a very bad situation. And a lot of the hostels have already closed. I think the second oldest hostel in Sand Hill and one of the biggest ones, I was talking to the owner of that the other day and that was really sad to hear that he's shutting down. Yeah, and they're all family-run places in Sand Hill, so it's tough.
Yeah, I've heard of a few places in Medellin shutting their doors, but I don't know how reliable my source was on that, but I've heard of a few places just saying, yeah, we're just shutting up. That's it. This is over.
Yeah.
So what are you
so
doing?
So many people don't know what they're doing. It's just, I think it's really, we're in a middle phase at the moment where it's like, well, there's a chance that in 3 months, hold on for another month and see if things are going to improve. And we can't really do anything anyway now. The people who do want to shut down, they can't hand over their buildings either and stuff like that. So they're just waiting to see what happens. But most people won't be able to afford to pay 6 months of rent, staff, run at a loss, pay their bills, electricity, water, and all that. There is no relief. There's no help to small business. There's been... This is the reliefs that have been offered to us are ridiculous, cutting our, you know, we don't have to pay tourism tax. If you're not making any money, there's no tourism tax to be paid. They're saying we don't have to pay for our registered or national de tourism. It's free anyway. I don't understand what that break was. The industry and commercial tax, we already paid it in February. And so they're giving us a break on that. To the people who haven't paid it, it doesn't really help the people who went and paid their bills on time kind of thing at the start of the year. So, there's no relief or help from anyone. So, it will be a completely different industry, a different country to travel in when people do finally return. There won't be many of the hostels people came to and loved and stuff, just won't be around.
Mm-hmm. I find it interesting you say, you know, about this relief and the lack of relief. And when I look at what the government and the banks are offering, there's still interest, of course, lower interest, but it's all loans, you know.
But you can't
pay them back?
One tourism business I know has got the loan. Everyone I know who applied just got told the money's run out or they're in a tourism business and the business won't be able to afford to pay back the loan in the next few years. And that's what the guys and that's why... I need a loan. We're not going to make a profit for the next year, so help us out.
Yeah, I know. So a six month hiatus on paying back, it really means nothing if you're not making any money anyway to be able to pay it back. You're just indebting yourself further. I got a loan, just so you know. Oh, I'm one of the few. But I'm the only person I know of who's got one. And it will allow us to run from the amount given will give us about 2 months. It's that pitiful. I don't want to, but I don't understand why and how it's just loans. I realize that the government may not have money and so on and so forth, and they'll blame, I don't know, peace, I guess, and they'll blame everyone else. It's all a big blame game. But, you know, these small and medium sized businesses are the ones who employ, you know, a lot of people who came out of the informal sector. I know that small and medium-sized businesses don't bring in what the oil market... Well, actually, we bring in more now than what Ecopetrol brings in, but with the price of the barrel of oil and so on. But we employ a lot of people, and, you know, this is key for the community and for each society, each little town, each barrio in the city. You know, you just kind of expect, rather than favoring the banks and favoring the big industries, you know, we need to be looked after as well.
Yeah, sure. But I mean, the amount of guys who are contacting me, just rafting guides, paragliding guides, anyone who works in adventure tourism, restaurant owners, they're like, the taxi drivers that would always do my runs and stuff, and my guests, they're all reaching out, asking me, but Sean, when are you going to have customers again? Because your customers are what, you know, feeds our families and stuff like that. So this, the whole way that the tourism money breaks down through the town of Sand Hill, the town needs tourism.
Needs to. So do you think, I mean, do you think you'll end 2020 in debt, or you'll be able to make, I mean, just making a positive prediction, will you be able to balance the books? Will May Lin balance the books for you?
Nah, we'll definitely take a large hit. It's trying to work out the decision of when to reopen the doors and stuff like that. It's going to be difficult, but yeah, we will definitely, if we can get back open and break even for the last 4 or 5 months of the year, just to cover the cost of the staff and keep them employed, that would be fantastic. But yeah. I can't see that happening, to be honest. One option is to try and think of something else we can do with our building and or other ways to make money, but the other idea will be, can I just get a job doing something else and use that money to keep the business alive?
Yeah. So, no, I understand you've got, you know, you're doing something you've got a business plan. Someone suggested this to me. I'm not sure how well it would work for me or so on, but you've got a slight business plan there. You're selling sort of... what would you call them? You're selling nights in the hostel to people overseas.
Yeah, we're selling prepaid vouchers for the hostel, like gift vouchers. The prepaid vouchers, it's not just for people overseas, it's for Colombian tourists. Well, it's pretty much aimed at our old customers. So a lot of people who reached out to me in the first weeks were, we hope Macondo's there to go back to when we return. It's our favourite hostel. Talking about their memories there. And I've had a lot of customers over the years that have stayed with me, you know, 6-7 times. There's families that come back every year. I've got a guest of mine, Roberto, who he first came to stay with me probably in about 2006. And I think was at one stage coming twice a year to stay. And from being a guest, he's become a close friend, and he's never paid a cent to stay at my hostel. I think I only charged him the first time. But there are people who are like that who've come back over and over. And so I started the idea looking at those guys and sent out an email to probably just the 60, 70 best guests, or not best, but guests that have become friends of mine, and saying, you know, if you want Macondo to still be here when you return next year, buy a prepaid gift voucher. The gift vouchers have no date on them, so if they're not coming back next year, it doesn't matter when you come back in 2025 or whenever you like, it's open. Obviously, these people are always people I love to have. The voucher would actually get a discount on their stay, so it is open to the public. Anyone can buy them if they're coming to stay. They plan on coming in Sand Hill, because you buy a voucher for 100,000 pesos, you get 125,000 pesos worth of credit in the hostel. So you do get a 25% discount off your stay, and people can choose the value of the voucher they want to buy, because there's obviously backpackers who stay in dorm rooms, and then there's families who stay in privates. Hang out, so you can buy a voucher for 300,000 pesos if you want, and you get 375,000 worth of credit. But yeah, it's been really positive actually. We've probably sold about 4 million pesos worth of vouchers at the moment. So, and out of those people, I'd say all but two of them are talking about coming back to Sand Hill within the next 12 months. So they are, a lot of them are foreigners or Colombians who live outside of Colombia. So they come back to Colombia once a year on their holidays, and they just tend to come to Sand Hill. So it's always good to have these guys as well.
Well, congratulations. I would say that's a very good haul. I don't know what your outgoings are like, but I would say that that's, you know, going to give you a couple of months of leeway with this.
No, obviously, I'm thinking about 15 days of leeway.
You really are. You spend.
It costs a lot more than that. Definitely doesn't cover the rent. Obviously, we need a lot more people, but I do kind of tend to feel that the ones that reached out in the first 15 days of the promotion, obviously, you're going to sell a lot more in the first 15 days than the next 30 days, kind of thing, because the people who I'm more in contact with were the ones that replied a bit quicker. But the idea is to start thinking of other ideas and thinking of things that we can offer or sell, and making a better product for national tourists in later in the year, whether or not it's offering, an English experience for families that want to come and do adventure activities, but with native English-speaking guides as well. And I would obviously, I'm going to have a lot more free time on my hands, so I might be, years ago when I first started my business, I was working as a guide on the river and the caves and stuff like that. So it might be time for me to put back on my life jacket and get in the boats and work with the guides again. So, yeah, we just got to work out how we can improve the experience for the guests, because having as the hostel's grown and become really popular, you get, hundreds of people staying, and you don't have that time to dedicate to small groups like you might have had before. So it's about going back to that and giving people a more personalized experience.
Yeah, I think, those of us who receive significant amounts of Colombians, and it's, obviously a major market for me, but it's a time to reassess, regroup, obviously with all the debts anyway, but regroup and think about how best to approach this next phase. My concern is, a lot of my guests are, quite firmly middle class, is that they're not going to have any money to travel, in a few months' time. Because, if you're not, if you don't work in a full-time office job, if you're freelance or a small business owner, or you've been furloughed like so many other people, you're just not going to have the money.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's all these, when we're talking about the national tourism, it is a bit wishful thinking. It's we're hoping that there's national tourism, and I'm constantly, getting all these emails and in chat groups about experts talking about tourism and what's going to happen. But it's all just a huge guess. Like I said to you before we started the program, just don't ask me what I think is going to happen in the future, because no one knows. Anyone who's saying that it's going to be this way or another way, the truth is no one has a clue what's going to be happening, and that's the scary thing.
I'm I, I've had it up to here with invitations for webinars and expert opinions and predictions. These are just predictions. These are best guesses. Anything they say is going to be incomplete. They might aim at something, but it's incomplete. And I don't know if these guys who are offering expert advice even have small businesses in small towns.
I've never heard of any single one of them that's appeared on my head.
Yeah, you might hold a fancy degree from Barcelona or something in tourism management, but unless you've got, you're actually on the ground, it's a different situation altogether.
Especially after the pandemic, I don't want to hear about
anybody. Just as we record this on the Friday before it goes out on the Tuesday, I just want to, are there any cases of coronavirus there in Sand Hill?
No, there's no cases. There is no cases in the surrounding towns either, Barichara, Kurupi. And then in the state, there's only 37 cases, I think, reported so far. The majority of them are in Pukaramunga. So we've been very lucky with that. I think when things first started, there was that fear of, this virus is going to be terrible, the healthcare system's terrible, what do I do? Do I leave the country and take my daughter back to Australia where things are going to be better? Should I be with my parents? Stuff like that. And then making the decision, we should be here for my wife's family, for the business, for my staff, stuff like that. And then once we started to realise, okay, in a country town, we might be able to get through this without it being too disastrous, that kind of kicking into just the economic problems and what's going to happen here. But we are lucky so far that Sand Hill has been virus free. And then when people are talking about the quarantine might end in 15 days and that, and I'm getting backpackers sending me emails going, oh, we've been stuck in Bogota, we're going to come to Sand Hill as soon as this is over. Whether or not people in Sand Hill will want outsiders from Bogota, not just foreigners, but people from Bogota, Medellin and that, arriving straight away who could be carrying the virus, that's another issue. So so far so good here.
Okay. Are they blocking the roads into Sand Hill? Do they have like checkpoints?
No, the small towns around here do that, but Sand Hill's too big and there's just too many roads. But it's also, all the other small towns around here rely on Sand Hill for market, for the hospitals and stuff like that. So Sand Hill definitely remains open. There are police checks. We can only go out one day a week. Today's my shopping day. But we haven't had no problems. For me, one of the big fears was social unrest. The people of Sand Hill have been amazing, I think. The majority of people are staying at home. They're being careful. You drive around on your shopping day and you do see, people social distancing, people wearing their face masks. Things have been very good. And at the same time, you're hearing the stories of everyone suffering so much and the red flags hanging out from people's homes because they don't have enough food to eat, and the calls on social media for families needing help and stuff like that. So people are suffering, but they are still staying in their homes and just hoping to get through this and hoping to be able to, hopefully soon, Sand Hill will, construction jobs and other jobs in the town can start back up and factories and that. Hopefully that will be the next step.
Nice. No, I mean, I'm here in Bogota with the biggest outbreak of cases and biggest tally of cases and stuff. But obviously my eyes are on Mompox, because if one case gets in there, it will spread like wildfire. The last time there was, I think it was an 1800 and something cholera. 700 people died in a day. So you sort of think it hasn't changed that much. But you think about it. Because we have establishments that receive a lot of foreigners, immediately everything was on us. Immediately it was like, oh, there's foreigners there. There's foreigners. And the country at that point had maybe 9 confirmed cases and we'd been visited by the Ministry of Hygiene and Health 12 times. I mean, it was just like everyone, there was someone getting on a phone to, you know, the departmental capital in Cartagena saying, we've seen more foreigners in the Casa Amarilla. And you're just like, come on, guys, come on. And yesterday, actually, we had guests, could you imagine? But they were workers from the Gobernación de Bolívar. They arrived in, you know, plastic suits. They were bathing their, you know, they had to wash their shoes with alcohol and take them off. I mean, everything was done. Separate rooms, of course, and we've basically bleached the rooms now. But the town went mental. The town, and you know, rightly so. They can do that. But, you know, what authority do they have? Why are they staying in this hotel? Why didn't they, like, well, they have to stay somewhere. Do you expect them to sleep in the streets? They're here anyway. I mean, better that we put them in a building and they do their meetings in, you know, however they have to do them. But it got pretty hardcore, I have to say.
Yeah, when things started, a couple of the hostels around town were ringing me saying, "Oh, you've shut down. What do you recommend?" And you don't want to be the first. You don't want to have the first case in the town being a guest at your hostel. That would be not worth the 20,000 pesos the guy's paying for a dorm bed, really. The town might pay for the next 50 years. So for me, it wasn't worth the risk.
Yeah, I mean, you'd carry that forever, that, you know, yeah. You'd carry it forever. Yeah,
every time you walk down the street, it'd be, that's the gringo who brought Corona to Sand Hill. I was already the gringo who brought swine flu to Sand Hill. I only just recovered.
I suppose the whole town knows that you had the swine flu now.
No one knew. It was, I got swine flu when I was in, I went down to Bogota to meet some friends and then headed up to Cartagena and got it while I fell ill while I was in Cartagena. I was in hospital in Cartagena and no one actually knew anything about it, Sand Hill, until the district nurse got a report sent to her about a month later saying, we just want to follow up on a case of swine flu that we went back to Sand Hill. And she went up that because leading up to that, I had all these meetings at the town office about, because I was the only hostel at the time, saying, no foreigners will bring swine flu to Sand Hill. The only Columbus have at the moment, because they wanted to shut down the hotel back then. I was like, that'd be ridiculous. No foreigner will bring it. And I was the only one who got it. So, anyway.
You've had your scrapes and your misadventures and your adventures, certainly. And, you know, I thank you for your time, especially on your shopping day, the day that you're allowed out and, you know, to find some fresh food and some canned goods to, you know, keep you through the next week. I wish you all the best. I wish all of us all the best, in truth. I mean, it's a difficult, challenging situation, but we have to adhere to the rules. I mean, maybe it's not the most sort of virulent disease out there, but the speed with which it moves, and of course the challenges that it would present to a healthcare system here in Colombia, are tantamount to a disaster in the making. So we have to be aware of what's going on.
With the hostel owners, Richard, as well, I'd just like to say, most of the hostel owners, even though this is destroying our businesses and our economy, most hostel owners understand that how bad this virus is and the need to do this. I haven't heard many people angry at all about the fact that we are in quarantine. I think most people are pretty supportive of it here in Colombia.
Yeah. In tourism. Yeah, I'd say so. But how can people do the prepaid vouchers? Can they just find them on your website?
Can I send you? Do you put a link on your page? I can send you the link that we have.
Absolutely.
Yeah, send me a link and it will go up on the pages.
Nice. So basically, if you're out there, if you've been to Sand Hill, you stayed at the Macondo, and you want to be charitable or goodwill or plan on coming back, do buy you know, one of these prepaid vouchers. It's a, I mean, 25% discount is quite significant, especially with the dollar to the peso right now. So that would be, you know, a nice idea to just, you know, a little bit of charity towards a small business there in Sand Hill. Sean, thank you for your time and thank you for sharing your thoughts and, of course, you know, intensely personal situation, having had swine flu and, of course, you know, the way the business seems, you know, the way it might evolve in the coming months and, of course, years. Thank you for agreeing to come on the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're most welcome. I'll be putting the links up to the prepaid vouchers on the Facebook page and, of course, on Twitter. And, of course, we'll link to Sean's hostel, Macondo, there in Sand Hill. I've stayed there when I was in Sand Hill. It was in a different building, but always a great stay, always a great place to stay because, you know, Sean knows the reputable guides and rafting outfitters and so on and for everything else in adventure sports. Remember, this is the guy who opened up Sand Hill to the international market. He's been around for quite some time, probably like number three in the was it tourism registry? I mean, we're now up to the thousands, but you know, he was setting up when Colombia didn't have any international tourism or just a trickle. So thank you again for listening to this episode number 322 of the Colombia Calling podcast. I'll be back next week with Sarah Lucy Cooper, who's going to be talking about her experiences in Colombia, dating all the way back to 1990 in the full-on Escobar years. So we'll be talking about that. In the meantime, please stay safe, adhere to the warnings, do take care. You know, we don't want to hear of any disasters or any further disasters. Thank you again. That's been me, Richard McColl, for Colombia Calling this week. Bye-bye.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.